Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Very good. So I was sitting in my hut this afternoon, wondering what I was going to talk about and meditating at the same time. Should have been doing nothing. But as I was meditating, I thought, when was the last... Actually, no, not when I was meditating. Just to move the meditation up a notch, just to get it just more engaged, because sometimes when you're meditating, part of the problem is not being engaged with the right thing, if it's your breath or nimittas or something. Very often we're engaged with the wrong things, too much thinking, too much worrying, too much negativity, whatever it is. If we're engaged with the wrong thing, obviously we'll never get anywhere in our meditation, we're wasting time. And we're missing the opportunity. I often mention that these rains retreat, this is incredible opportunity where you have for peace and quiet. But just it came up into my mind that one of the ingredients in the cake, which is like meditation, which was missing this afternoon, was something which I haven't thought about for a long time. It's incredible that you miss out these beautiful things, simple things like kindness. And as soon as I remembered a bit of loving kindness, a bit of metta to what I was doing, then my meditation took off. And I often remember this, that is an ingredient which I see that too many people, when they're meditating, they miss out. They're too hard and harsh. And there's no softness, there's no kindness, there's no gentleness, there's no this beautiful engagement, because loving kindness does engage you with the little object, whatever you're watching. And it's not only engaging you with the object, it brings up this beautiful sense of happiness, which I was talking about last week. And your meditation starts to take off. And not just your meditation takes off, but your life takes off as well. You have this beautiful kindness towards all the other people. You're not demanding of other people. You don't ask them to do stuff. You're just happy to help. Just like me. Just sometimes that, you know, people say, don't you get upset that you get exploited, Ajahn Brahm? And I said, no, please exploit me some more. I say to them... Yeah, up to a point, obviously, there comes a limit. But you have this beautiful joy in helping and serving and looking after people and doing whatever you can to help them. You know, as long as you've got enough energy left, you know, you're very happy to serve, to help, because that's an active type of loving kindness and brings me so much joy afterwards. And if I've helped someone, looked after them, served them, done service for them, whatever... You go back to your hut afterwards and meditate. No, you just get beautiful meditations. And it's not just the karma of service. I've talked about that a lot before, the karma of service, helping out other people, looking out for your fellows in the monastic life, and fellow nuns as well, fellows is gender neutral. It's not just looking after one another in monastic life, it's just developing this beautiful mind state of softness and kindness. And I was telling one of the people this afternoon, he said, look, in your meditation, always keep it simple, keep it to the basics, and then you can't go wrong. And the simple teachings of make peace, and I talked a lot about making peace so far this rains retreat, but it's also being kind. Now, this other part of the second factor of the Eightfold Path, which if you can develop that kindness, that softness, just like a mother loves her child, and you can see, for those of you who come upstairs, whenever there's a kid comes to this monastery, a baby, and there's always babies in this monastery, I think it's like a nursery, not a monastery, but... There's always babies around, and you can see just everybody likes to hold a baby and play with the baby, except for monks like me, of course. And of course, that sometimes happens. Was it happened last week? I don't think many of the monks were there, had already left. They wanted to have a photograph of me with their kid sitting on my lap. Well, that was a very close, dangerous thing. So it's a boy, so that was okay. So I took hold of the kid, putting on my lap and said, quick, quick, before he starts crying or screaming. I know what it is, these parents, they don't know how to use their mobile phones. This was the right button. I got the wrong button. Come on, hurry up. This is dangerous for a monk. But anyway, they got the photo just in time of this little kid before it started screaming. But anyway, you know, they're kids. They're all kids. They always generate a lot of loving kindness, a lot of softness. You don't want to harm them. And it's the same as you protect little people. So why don't you protect yourself as well? Little you, your little mind. And with that type of softness which you have to your mind, especially in meditation, on my little breath, on my little sort of stupid mind sitting in the hut all afternoon or in the cave, when you have that tiny little bit of kindness towards you, you find meditation takes off. Now, of course, sometimes when you're meditating a lot during these range retreats, sometimes your mind gets a little bit bored. So it's nice to actually to give it a bit of work to do. You're going to be thinking about something. Of course, the best is not to think about anything at all, to keep peaceful, to keep silent, not to do anything. However, for many of you, that's an impossibility. You're going to think about something, whether it's plans for building a monastery in Melbourne, whether it's plans about visiting somewhere, whether it's thinking about, you know, what you're going to do after the range retreat or whatever. It's amazing just how many things we think about. So if we are going to use our brain with thinking, it's helpful to use it for something useful, like loving-kindness meditation. And that's no why that sometimes they have these loving-kindness meditations where you actually do have to use your brain. You have to do something. You have to conceptualize. You know, you all have known the way I decided to do loving-kindness meditation a long time ago. I don't do it these days because you just have to think of loving-kindness and just get the essence up rather than actually work to arouse that feeling of loving-kindness. But I use the old kitten. Or anything which you can look at, remember, which gives rise to the feeling of loving-kindness. And if it's not strong, if you've got a mind which wanders very easily, and you can't keep the loving-kindness in your mind long enough, then you have to work on it. So, you know, you work on just think of why you should have loving-kindness, or think of all sorts of beings in the Eastern Quarter, the Western Quarter, the North, the South, let's say, they're doing the Buddha's loving-kindness meditation exercise, or in like Ajahn Chah Chai's, that's Sujata's teacher's loving-kindness exercise. All of those things are actually quite useful because, you know, okay, you are using your mind, you are thinking, you're not being peaceful, but at least you're using the mind, which will think anyway, in a beautiful way. In a way which develops the concept, the feeling, first of all, the concept, and then the emotion, the feeling of loving kindness until it gets strong enough that you can actually focus on it and you can be with it. Because once it's arisen, it is pleasurable, which is just even today having a bit of loving kindness to my mind. You know, it's a bit dull this afternoon, but you know, sometimes it's dull, I don't know why. Sometimes it's got energy, I don't know why, but just the nature of the body, the nature of the mind. But when you are a little bit dull, you can actually use a bit of loving kindness. You know, just think of just all the beautiful monks and nuns in our monasteries. And just all the hard work they do, all the kindness which they do, all the amazing, beautiful qualities in them. And if you can't do that, I mean, what are you doing in this monastery anyway? It's just, can't you see just how amazing the people you live with are? And how they just do little, nice little services for you every now and again when you don't even ask for anything. All of those of you who are on retreat, and when somebody brings the food to you in the bowl, you look at that food in the bowl and someone's really cared to actually to put the right food in. I have to say this because I'm going on retreat next week. They really cared, I hope. Put the right food in the right place, please. Now, it always happens whenever I go on retreat and people bring the food to me. I just blows me away, just the kindness of, you know, a monk taking a bit of extra time to make sure that you get nice food in the bowl. Or the kindness of, you know, an anagarika coming up because they've forgotten something and they just put it on the tray for you. Or just the kindness that someone's looking out for you, making sure you've got enough, even though that, you know, they know the answer's going to be, they've got plenty. Just asking the question, are you okay? You've got enough requisites. How are you feeling? That's such a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful feeling to have a monastery where people actually do care for one another. And so you reflect upon that. And you reflect upon that not just so much for the joy, but just to appreciate the beauty of this attitude of caring, of loving kindness. Because the more you dwell on something, the stronger it becomes in you as a character trait. The more you dwell on negativity, on fault finding, of course, the more that becomes your character trait. And you become a very negative person, always criticizing, putting other people down. It's easy to put people down and to see their faults. Anyone can do that. Just read a newspaper. Just go to the pub. Just go to any other place. We're always putting people down. I just remember just years and years and years ago when I first came here, when I wasn't so pampered, I used to go off and give talks and go on public transport. I had on my little card, I forget what it was called in those days, they keep changing the names of these things, the little card where you can go on the trains and the buses. I gave a talk at, I think it was at a school. The school's closed down now. It wasn't my fault, but coming back, sitting on a bus, and a couple of schoolgirls were sitting in front of me, about 13 or 14. And it's an amazing conversation, which I would never forget. It was about 20 minutes and half an hour till I got to the train station where I can get the next part of my journey. But listening to them, and these were obviously friends, two girlfriends, 13, sitting next to each other on the way home after school, and just criticizing each other all the way back. These were friends saying, you know, you're ugly, you'll never get a boyfriend. But look at you, you've got flat breasts. No boy would ever like you. And it went on like this, you know, just all the way through. And then this is how friends talk to one another. I wonder what enemies say. And unfortunately, that's part of the life in our modern world. People are always backing each other, criticizing. Anyone can do that. But in a monastery, in a religious community, you know, instead of like backing one another, we develop this beautiful loving kindness. That loving kindness, when you develop that, you spend a lot of time on it, it means that, you know, you just have this beautiful feeling for one another in this monastery. Not just for one another, but the kangaroos and the parrots and all these other hangers-on who come around. You always see them at lunchtime. You never see them for the rest of the day. All these hangers-on monastery getting the food. But it's really good fun. You get a lot of joy out of that, just to see these animals trying to get food from you. But yeah, it's great feeding them. It may not be good for them, but I don't know if it may be good for their hearts. You know, you're teaching them just Buddhist monks begging. It's their way of getting alms food, the parrots and the kangaroos. But anyway, so they're sort of begging from you, just like we beg from others for our food. So anyway, that there's many mendicants in this monastery, and not just the monks, obviously. And just it gives you a lot of happiness and joy. And that joy is just a simple kindness and caring. So that kindness and caring, when you generate that in your daily life, and you also generate it to yourself, don't be hard on yourself and forceful on yourself. There's no kindness there. There's no sort of gentleness, no softness there. And that's no way you can get any deep progress or any progress on the path without that kindness. All the great monks which I have known, the ones, you know, the nuns, there was one great nun which I was very unfortunate not to actually see. There was that Mechi Gi Kosuen Lung. I was in invited to go there for the day to see her, but decided to meditate instead. Should have gone. But anyway, all the great monks I saw were just so soft and so kind and so welcoming him. And you can actually see what a great monk was. There was no force in them. There was no sort of harshness. Often somebody reminded me the other day of that simile which I got about the spikes simile. The spikes simile is that people have got spikes, invisible spikes coming out of them. Everybody has, except fully enlightened arahats. They're the only ones with no spikes. So most people in this world, they've got long, sharp spikes. And if you come close to them, you get scratched. Most people have got the average spikes. You can get close enough, but if you get too close, you invade their personal space, then you get scratched by their spikes. There are some people who've got hardly any spikes at all. These are really kind people, soft people. You like to hang out with because you feel so safe. You never get scratched in their company. They never put you down. They never see your faults. Those are people with very, very short spikes. They're almost there at the end of the path. And you've got those people with no spikes at all. There's no way you can ever get harmed or hurt by them. And you feel that. They just want to help you and care for you. They've got loving kindness. They're free of the aversion, ill will, defilement. That is a defilement of the mind. Aversion, ill will, anger, hatred, that negative part of the human mind. And when you meet people without that, it's just such a beautiful relief. Such a relief that you realize you don't have to do anything. Which means that you relax and become so peaceful. Okay, I was trying to avoid that anecdote which I've told so many times, but I enjoy telling it because I enjoy remembering it. It brings me so much peace and happiness. It's when I went to see Ajahn Tate, one of the great monks in the time of when I was in Thailand. He was a monk when I first came to Thailand. He was being treated in Sirirat Hospital for very bad cancer. And while I was, I think, just the first few months going up to Wat Pa Phong before Wat Nanachat was built, the news was that the doctors had given up hope on him. He was going to die. So he said, if I'm going to die, I might as well die in my monastery in Hin Mak Peng, in Nong Khai province, on the banks of the Mekong River. So that's where he went to die. And it was about 23 years later he finally passed away. Well, no, much longer than that, I think. But anyway, so much for the doctors knowing what's going to happen. But, you know, when I went to see him this one time, that was just one of those unforgettable experiences as a monk, which is why I like retelling it again and again and again, going to this palace which was built by the king for him, this huge room, and there was this old monk sitting in a wicker chair in the corner, Ajahn Tate, just looking out into the Mekong River through the windows. And as soon as, you know, he turned to look at you, wham, bang, just he bowled over by his loving kindness. You could feel it. It was the sense that this monk could impossible he could do you any harm. He would not criticize you, embarrass you, put you down. You were totally accepted, 100%. You didn't have to do anything anymore. You didn't have to achieve anything. You didn't have to change. You didn't have to better yourself. You didn't have to improve yourself. There was no one there. You were just accepted totally, 100% in this moment. And that was such a beautiful, wonderful feeling. The monk with no spikes at all. And felt so safe, embraced, accepted. And of course, what happened next was it just went really peaceful. The mind didn't move. Why does the mind move? It always wants something. It moves because it's not good enough here. You want to go somewhere else. It moves because you think you've got to get something more. It moves because you're not happy where you are. It moves because you're negative to whatever is happening now. You think you're not good enough. This mind state is not good enough. And somewhere around in the future, you can get nimittas and jhanas, then everything will be okay. Just that's, you know, the happiness ever after. Getting going to nimittas is like riding into the sunset, literally. Happy ever after, all that sort of myth. And instead you just sat there and just, wow, peace at last. You get a taste of freedom. Freedom from wanting, freedom from having to achieve, to do anything. That's a total opposite of what I heard from sitting behind those two schoolgirls. Always negative and not good enough and having to improve. This was the total sense of you don't have to do anything more. Just be. And that was such a beautiful thing that I forgot all my questions. Never wanted to move from there. And it gave me an idea of what the loving kindness truly is, a feeling of total acceptance and warmth and being safe and being cared for. So I use those experiences. You must have had some experiences like that where you felt so at ease and peace. Nothing was wrong. It was a loving kindness experience. A metta, opening the door of your heart to this moment without any criticism, without anything wrong. Whoever you are, whatever you're doing, the door of your heart was open to yourself. Peace at last. How easy it is. You don't have to change. You don't have to work hard. Maybe I'm a lazy monk, but I don't like working hard. I like being. Just at peace. Without work. Work is what I do other times of the day. Now, maybe tomorrow, which never comes. But here, right now, just to be. With that type of acceptance, the kindness, there's a sense of joy there, a great sense of relief, like a whole heap of suffering has been taken away from you. Often like the simile of you're walking through life with these heavy backpacks on. I used to have a backpack when I was a student, walking through the through the mountains of Scotland during the summertime. Backpack was really heavy, climbing up these mountains with a backpack on, and not like the light ones you have these days. You know, my tent was a big cloth one, not light, with actually real posts of wood, not these aluminium stuff. And all your food you were taking with you, it was really sort of tough, heavy. But then you put your backpack down and be free. And that's like just when you let go of stuff. It's like putting these very heavy weights, which we keep carrying around with us. And you don't need to carry those things. You can put them down. And this is actually like loving kindness, what it really does to you. The big heavy weight of having to change yourself, to improve yourself, the heavy weight of having to become enlightened, having to get jhana, this range retreat, otherwise you feel like you're a failure. The big heavy burden of all these plans which you have, what you want to achieve, where you want to go, what you want to do. All these heavy burdens of thinking you're not good enough. You have to improve. It's amazing to take that big backpack off and you feel so free. Free just to be. And this is like giving yourself that loving kindness. Imagining yourself like that Ajahn Tate, who just, you sit in your own presence and you feel totally accepted, totally at peace with yourself. You don't have to achieve anything. You don't have to prove anything to yourself. Because that's the biggest problem. People are still trying to prove something to themselves, trying to live up to some ideal, which I don't know where you got that from. Hope it wasn't from me. You're trying to be something you're not. It's wonderful when you have that great sense of loving kindness, because then what happens when you don't try to improve, when you're trying to let go, and you have this beautiful sense of kindness and warmth towards this moment, and the mind engages with this moment. Mindfulness increases. You feel so peaceful, so still. And you know what comes up next? Nimittas. Brilliant, beautiful ones. Oh, I just remember just some of the old times. Never forget the time when good old days before Jhana Grove, we used to teach these retreats in Safety Bay in Penguin Road. I always remember those ones, this Catholic monastery. I used to like that because the Catholic nuns there, they used to make old Australia, which is basically English food for us. So there's really, everyone else complained, but not me. I love that stuff. But anyway, no curries, no rice. Woohoo! I'm a Westerner. I wasn't brought up on rice. But anyway, those were the days I used to work like, really like a slave, just all day. So you worked all day Friday and then quickly get yourself showered, in the car, off to teacher retreat. And all these people, when you're a teacher, like some of the senior monks know, sometimes you feel the pressure's on you. All these people come, they want to be inspired. And they paid money for this retreat for the whole weekend. What happened if you really bomb out and give a stupid talk? And just, or like this one monk I used to stay with. Incredible monk. Just not a psychic power. It's just, I think, something wrong with his brain or something, because he would give a talk like I'm giving now. And honestly, give a talk, and then he'd fall asleep in the middle of his talk. In the middle of his own talk, okay? And we didn't know what to do, because this was no Asia. You're not supposed to upset people by throwing things at him or telling him to wake up or coughing or anything. You didn't even dare to cough, So you just waited there, and then he'd wake up after 3 or 4 minutes, and he'd carry on exactly where he left off. That was actually magical. That was actually quite astounding. For him, it was just like a pause, and he didn't notice he paused. He just, like he carried on giving a talk. He didn't realize he'd fallen asleep. That's crazy stuff. But what if I did that? I mean, I wouldn't get away with it, because this wasn't Thailand. People would cough and they'd shout, they'd complain, and they'd walk and they'd demand their money back and go home. So, when you're really tired, you're saying, oh, crikey, what am I going to do? I've got to give a talk now. Well, at the time I thought, okay then, let's experiment. Because I love experimenting, being ex-scientist. Loving kindness with the breathing meditation, watching your breath go in and out. But put the loving kindness in, really a lot of loving kindness. So it's 50% metta meditation, 50% breath meditation. Oh, that was a great retreat for me. I'll never ever forget that one. Just really tired, exhausted, but wow, that was one hell of a meditation. And come out afterwards, really brilliant talk. Because that was the night. I think I can get away with saying this. That was a night that, I fell asleep, but I dreamt of jhanas all night. Now, if you're going to have dreams, that is the best dream at all. Just blissing out all night in your dreams. And waking up, of course, just really powerful mind state. Not at all tired in the morning. Just because that power of loving kindness and the breath together, that just got your mind straight onto the breathing, but without controlling it. Just like Lumpu Tate, Ajahn Tate, just didn't have to do anything. He felt so at ease just not doing things. Not doing things was accepted. You could just be. That's what I was doing, just being with my breath. Breath can do whatever it wanted. It can disappear if it wanted to. I could fall asleep, I didn't care. This beautiful sense of acceptance. Beautiful sense of letting go. Because that's what loving kindness really is. It's just letting go seen from another angle with a bit of juice in it as well, the happiness and joy of loving kindness. So every now and again, you forget these things, and every now and again you just find this, something is lacking in your meditation, so you focus on it and it builds up again. Just like you look at your car, sometimes it needs water, so you add water. Another time you check the oil, it needs oil. Another time it needs petrol, gas, and you put the gas in it. So every time that you look at your engine, your mind, what does it really need? And so this afternoon it needed a bit of boost of loving kindness, a bit of metta, just to give it whoa, give it some oomph to it. And it always does give it really good oomph to it. And you wake up, you're energized, and you have this beautiful loving kindness, beautiful meditations, and you just don't want to come out. Just like I never wanted to leave the presence of Ajahn Tate. It was this beautiful experience which you know, you have in meditation. And that experience was, and I've told it to you before, I sat there and said, they're going to have to drag me out of here. I'm not going to leave. I'm going to stay here for the rest of my life. I don't want to move. And it felt this beautiful sense of welcoming, acceptance, warmth, being at ease. And that's what you feel in meditation. Ma is going to have to drag me out of here. I'm not going. I'm staying with this beautiful experience, this loving kindness breath. I'm not going anywhere. You can't move. You're stuck. You're still. It's not a sense of you having to apply yourself to what to have to stay, to try and work to stay, to try and keep still, try and put effort into being still. There's no effort there at all. There's this beautiful sense you belong here. This is where you need to be. It's where you really should be. And you stay there. And things have to drag you to actually to come out of that meditation. And that was actually an appointment with Amandus. Otherwise, I'd still be up there probably. But that was okay. So these are the things which can get you to have that stillness, which is part of the meditation. The ekagata, just gone to the single state of mind, stability. Not through force, but just through having this beautiful sense of acceptance and warmth and loving kindness. Metta, door of my heart's open to this moment. So we actually develop that. The door of my heart's open to this moment is one of the ones which I've used a lot because it inspires me, still does to this day. No matter what I am, no matter what I do, no matter how my talks are, no matter how I am as a teacher, oh, if I really stuff up, if I make a good job of it, the door of my heart's going to be equally open to me, make peace with myself. Total acceptance. And people who think, well, that you're not pushing yourself, you're not achieving your best, you're not going to get anywhere in your meditation. Oh, I think I said this last week, but I saw it again today on my desk, that Looney cartoon. You're not going to achieve anything. And Looney says, beautiful. But you're not going to get where everyone else is going. Oh, that's so wonderful. But you're not going to get anywhere in life. Oh, that's so peaceful. It's called The Plodder. Very good cartoon by Looney. Everyone else is trying to get somewhere in meditation. Actually, that was sent to me by Dhammasavanan. Thank you so much. Very great birthday card. The Plodder. And it's a wonderful sense of where you're trying to get to anyway. So don't follow other people trying to achieve things. Instead, just have this beautiful loving kindness. Achieve that. Just being at peace with this moment. This beautiful kindness to this moment. Because you know, the kindness, the loving kindness meditations are really part in the suttas. They're right bang there. Sometimes that people just forget about those loving kindness in the suttas and the advice of the Buddha and the great teachers, and they just give themselves too hard a time. And you're meditating there and just, oh, you just keep pushing and you're feeling bad about yourself because you haven't got jhanas. Don't get into the negativity over there. To get deep meditation, you have to have some degree of the kindness, the joy, which comes from meditation. Sometimes that you get peaceful in meditation, you know, do the breath meditation or any type of samatha meditations, and of course the loving kindness just comes up there. It comes up with me often as just a result of stillness. It seems that they belong together there somewhere. Used to say to the lay people about, you know, the samatha vipassana, and metta the dog going up the mountain. Always go up the mountain together. You can't distinguish samatha and vipassana and metta the dog. They always go together. That's, you know, samatha vipassana and metta. I don't know why they always have samatha vipassana and they leave out metta. The three always go together. And when those three always go together, you may be focusing on samatha, or focusing on vipassana, or focusing on metta, but the other two always go along, invariably. And so sometimes you're just doing some samatha, calming your mind down, you get this beautiful joy and kindness. That's supposed to happen. So develop it, cultivate it, make much of it, don't be afraid of it. Because the loving kindness, when it happens in the meditation, there's beautiful things for your mind, and also beautiful things for your body. So many, we're talking today, so many monks have got little sicknesses here, little sicknesses there. Just blast those sicknesses with some loving kindness. Because the loving kindness does have incredible power to heal and do all sorts of stuff. What was it with loving kindness? Oh, you got Ajahn Gunhas, sort of great loving kindness monk. You know, he's a guy who pats king cobras on the top of their head. You got that. One of my other favorite stories was Ajahn Lee, who went on Tudong, got to a village, told the village headman he's going to stay in the forest. So you used to have to do this so the villagers would know to expect you for lunch or for the Bindabata story the next morning. So I went into the tell the village headman and then went to sit in the forest under a tree to meditate. Oh, the villagers said they wanted to have a Dhamma talk that night. So they said I'd be there in a couple of hours. Sat there under a tree, meditating. I think he was doing breath meditation or buddho probably. And then the red ants started crawling up his legs. And these are the big red ants. They bite you. And they're actually quite fierce, the red ants in Thailand. And they started crawling all over his legs, up into his private parts, biting everything. And of course it hurt. And so the next thing he knew, he was running. He had no mindfulness at all about getting up. He just, you know, natural reaction to the pain, started running away until he realizes, oh, I'm a monk. I shouldn't be running away from these things. So being a tough guy, a bit stupid, but tough, he went down and sat right in the middle of this huge swarm of red ants, millions of them, carefully sat down. And they started calling up him again. But this time he did loving kindness meditation. And of course, when you've got ants biting you, you know, your loving kindness has sort of got a focus. And you tend not to wander off into fantasies. So actually you do it seriously. And so he did his loving kindness. And it didn't take that long, apparently, in this story. When the ants, they stopped biting him. He could still feel them crawling on him, which is not, you know, very pleasant. And then he felt them crawling off him, crawling down his body. They all crawled down his body until the last one left his foot. And he had this beautiful meditation, because he must have done this determination 2 hours, come out because the lay people were going to come. And then when he opened his eyes, he actually was disturbed. They were all dancing because they were getting bitten by these red ants, because there were millions of them all around him in all directions, like a 1 meter no man's land. And just around his body, they were protecting him from the villagers. It's amazing just how animals can actually get that loving kindness. They were protecting this monk. And that loving kindness can do stuff like that. And it's a beautiful thing. It protects you from your defilements as well. You know, from all this wanting and aversion and negativity and frustration especially. Because this time of retreat, sometimes people get frustrated. Oh, another 6 weeks to go. How am I going to handle this? You don't have to handle it. Just develop beautiful loving kindness to this moment. This is good enough for me. Have this beautiful joy, because loving kindness has loving kindness for all sorts of beings. You don't have to be perfect to have loving kindness. And in fact, you know, you see the little babies, they're far from perfect. They're beautiful loving kindness towards them, towards the parrots, towards the kangaroos, towards life, towards one another. When you have this beautiful loving kindness to imperfection, then imperfection is not imperfect anymore. It just changes to something you can be at peace with. And when you're at peace with something, you're content with it. When you're at peace with something and you're content with it, because you're not wasting your mental energy, happiness gets stronger and stronger. Energy, it gets wasted by frustration, wasted by effort going into the wrong places. It gets wasted by doing something. That's why people get tired and exhausted sometimes when they're meditating and fighting the mind or fighting their body. When you stop fighting the mind and fighting the body and put the energy where it really belongs, in something like loving kindness, developing it, you know, open the door of your heart to this moment, no matter what this is. I really care for this moment. I really care for it. It's important. I don't know why, but I'm going to learn something from this. So thank you for coming this moment. It's beautiful kindness, acceptance, embracing this moment. And you're at peace. You're still. You're not wasting energy, which means the energy starts to flow more and more into mindfulness. The mindfulness increases, the happiness increases. And the shit starts to look beautiful in the toilet bowl, the old story. And everything starts to improve. And your mind, your meditation just takes off. It goes into the stratosphere. Simply because you added that little bit of loving kindness, which gave you a bit of appreciation, rest, and stopped being so fault-finding with the moment. How easy it is to do that. And you're sitting there just like I sat with an Ajahn Tate. You're sitting there in this moment, not wanting to leave, totally at peace with yourself because your mind has now got no spikes on it. Your mind just accepts and is at peace with things. Now that's a mind which is worth developing. So that's the talk for this evening. Developing a loving-kindness mind without spikes.